Hello and welcome to Table Talk. This is the podcast where we connect current culture with Christianity. We do that by exploring stories and things that are going on in the world today and connecting them back to our Christian faith by chatting with a load of amazing guests and going through their experiences and their understanding of what's going on. And at the moment, it feels very topical. We've got the Rugby World Cup going on. So we've got a great guest in our virtual studio today, ready to chat to us all about that. But before we do that, I am Graham. I'm joined as always by Jack in our virtual studio. Jack, say hi.
Hi guys, it's Jack here. I'm sat in the office at work. It's a Monday lunchtime. So we've had the first weekend of the Rugby World Cup, so we'll dig into that. But first, I had someone tell me that they found it quite funny that almost we got flipped back on our last episode with Tim, and he actually almost became the host and started asking Graham about his imposter syndrome. So how's that going, Graham? Are you okay?
Yeah, feeling good. I did enjoy that, how Tim absolutely flipped the script on us a little bit with that. And at one point, I loved it. He was like, Jack, I just want to bring you in, actually. And I was like, wait, who's hosting this podcast?
Who's in control?
But no, it was great. It felt like a therapy session, to be honest with you. It was very cathartic. And it was really interesting working through that. I find often with some people, they're really good at making things that you assume you understand really simple. Mm. And then you realize, like, I didn't really understand that. And now I think I do. And I found Tim's just walkthrough and analogies around imposter syndrome really helpful. And it has been on my mind. I'm in week 5 of my new job now, and it's definitely been helping me. So, yeah.
I love that. It was a fun episode. Lots of people have been saying, oh, like, I listen to Table Talk on my commute. And it's like quite a cool thing to think about, imposter syndrome on the way to work. Yeah. Anyway, on to today's topic and our special guest who's been waiting patiently while we ramble on. We've got Angus here. Angus, now I need to get this right, this pronunciation, okay? So is it Kernahan or Kernahan or help me, Angus?
It's the first one. It's Kernahan. Kernahan. A lot of English go for Kernahan, yeah.
Do they? Okay.
So glad to hear you get it right first go, yeah.
Well, thank you very much. So Angus, he is a professional rugby player, but he started, as you can tell from his accent, back home in Ireland, Northern Ireland. He was part of the Ulster squad then, played some Ireland under-20s rugby, now based in West London at the Ealing Trailfinders Club. And we're going to dig into all of that. But before that, Angus, as I said, it's Monday. We've had the first weekend of the Rugby World Cup. I think we've got to start laying our cards on the table in terms of predictions, who's looking good. Where would the smart money be, do you think, on who's going to win the World Cup this year?
It just has to be Ireland.
No, really?
You're asking an Irishman here. I mean, come on.
We're the world number one, albeit we weren't playing the best opposition in the world, but we were firing on all cylinders. A couple of errors, but we still absolutely destroyed them. England are weak. They are. They're not playing brilliantly. But the style of rugby that England play, they can win championships. They're a big physical team, and they're never, ever going to be bad. And I could still see them having a really good run in this World Cup.
Okay, and last night, did you guys catch any of the South Africa-Scotland game? Graham, I'm assuming you watched that.
I have to admit, I was feeling a bit flat afterwards.
Oh,
first
really?
Half was pretty good. We finished 6-3 in the first half. And actually, we won a couple of scrum penalties, which I was like, did not see that coming, because they've got a big old pack. But so I was feeling pretty good at halftime. And then sadly, they sort of pulled away a little bit in the second half. And I just kind of left feeling like, you know, if we'd got absolutely trounced, it would have been almost better, but it was kind of neither here nor there. And it was just, we only scored 3 points from a penalty and we didn't really have much to show for it. So, I don't know. Hopefully we'll play better in the next couple of games. But then we've got Ireland in the final group game, which
that'll be great.
I think could be brutal.
I know. I feel like for the podcast, we've got an Englishman, an Irishman, and a Scotsman. All we needed is a Welshman, and then we could have had a really good kind of.
We're teed up for a really good joke right there, aren't we?
Okay, what about, can we just chat? Lots of our listeners might not be that into the World Cup, but one of the things that seems it might be a theme is kind of red cards and like dangerous tackles. Angus, can you give us your thoughts on that? We got England got another red card against Argentina for arguably, it was a clash of heads, shall we say, but was it super dangerous? What's your view?
South Africa didn't get a red card, more importantly, which...
Okay, Graham.
I think we probably will see quite a lot of red cards. I think the challenge probably was a red card. Rugby now is you've got to, whatever situation you go into, you've got to go in prepared to be able to change your body height, to be able to change your footing. It's the same with the tackles that we're seeing of the shoulders to the head. If you go in too fast and someone changes their angle last minute, that is your fault for going in too fast. You've then put yourself in an ability where you can't adapt. And with everything we've seen with head injuries and long-term effects, you have to just be prepared. It's the same as what we saw in the air a few years ago, where they said, okay, if you go into the air uncontrolled, even if you're going for the ball, so doing something that's technically legal, and you take someone out and they land dangerously, it's your fault, you're liable. I think it's just got to be the same with heads. So Billy Vunipola got to make sure that he checks his feet. And, well, Owen Farrell, yeah, he definitely needs to check his feet a little
bit. Okay, thank you. That was a very balanced, fair review, I think. Do you know any of the squad? Do you know any of the players in the squad? Anyone you're particularly rooting for?
I'd be rooting for Tom O'Toole particularly. Yeah, he's my age group at Ulster. All the Ulster boys, to be honest with you, there's four of them out there. Henderson, Rob Herring, Stuart McCluskey, Tom. I'd love to see Stuart McCluskey go really well. I feel he's one of the most underrated players. I feel like if he gets a chance, he'll make a really good run for it.
Angus, maybe just to get into a little bit of like your career and your background with rugby, I would love to know, firstly, how did you get into it? And when did you know you were going to get pretty serious about rugby? You know, go down the professional route. Yeah. And what have some of the highlights been?
I got into rugby through my dad. I think back then people would have looked at me and gone, that's a good rugby player, he had good skills. And probably at the heart of it, I was just always ultra competitive. And I was always the smallest, but I would have probably been one of the best tacklers even at that stage. So I was good. My dad was brilliant. He was one of our coaches and just always supported me. Yeah, I loved it. And yeah, played all the way up. I got picked for the Ulster under-16s when I'd have been 14, so that was a year early. I left medallion rugby, I think, at 40-something kilos. And my dad, I think, realised if he's going up into senior rugby and playing against, not men, but, you know, a lot of them aren't far off. So I hit the gym hard that summer. I remember my dad saying, you need to be able to bench 80 kilos. It's not heavy, it's not light, but it's enough to just get by. And, you know, that was my target. And I got a natural growth spurt. I hit the gym and also just putting donuts into me, drinking pints of milk, trying to get big. So I went away 40 something kilos and I came back double, came back around 85.
Oh, wow.
I grew over half a foot as well.
That's a big summer of growth.
Yeah, a big summer. A few eyebrows were raised, but it was completely natural.
No juicing.
No juicing, yeah. So I moved to 12, and that year was fifth year. So I got picked for under-18s, played 2 years of Ulster under-18s, which was a big thing. And my final year played Irish under-18s. I also captained the Irish under-18s sevens. And we went to Germany and won the European Championship, which was pretty amazing. And I remember being pretty disappointed that I didn't get picked into the Ulster Academy. They put me into the Ulster Sub-Academy at that stage, which is completely unpaid. And that was very disappointing. I felt like that year I'd played really well. I'd been, I thought, one of the best players in the school's rugby. So it was disappointing. Mm. And I felt a little bit like, because I wasn't at a big Belfast school, I was just a country bumpkin, that we maybe got treated not as well. And I still feel that way, even though my academy coach is now the defence coach at Ealing Trailfinders. So I've said to him a few times that I still feel harshly done by his decision. Yeah, so I played sub-academy that year, but I made my way onto the Ulster A team and also got picked for the Irish under-20s, a year young. But yeah, I played 18 times for Ulster that year. One of them we beat Leicester at home, which was amazing. I still remember probably my favourite tackle I've ever made. Someone flung a ball really wide and I'd be like, right, it's my chance now to go and make a big tackle while the ball's in the air. But as I looked up, it was Manu Tuilagi about to catch the ball. And I was like, I've just got to commit here. So I threw myself at him as hard as I could and probably made like an okay tackle, even though I threw myself as hard as I could. But he knocked the ball on and then he got taken off the pitch, I think just because he just wasn't really there mentally. But I like to think that I put him off through injury. but that was an amazing experience, yeah. Like Leicester, you know, with all of their history coming to Ulster and playing in front of my home crowd, my home province, having all my family there, that was an amazing experience. And that year as well, Ireland under-20s, we won the Grand Slam. So that was an amazing experience as well. And then went out to Argentina for the World Cup. And then the next season, I just completely fell out of favour with the coach. Yeah, there were a few things on the field that he didn't like, I think, and a couple of them off. I played very little, and then COVID hit. I maybe played three times that season, I think, three or four, and COVID hit. And that season, I just realised that there was no point being a probably fifth or sixth choice. I wanted to go and play rugby. So my agent was looking for me, and Ealing came in with an offer. Made the big move to Ealing during COVID. First season was the Saracen season. So we played really well. They went flat out, which was so fun. It was unbelievable playing at the Stone X. And I think my first carry was into Lazowski and Good. I just remember thinking, this is good. Like, it's a challenge. And probably that was one of the moments I really looked at my career and went, okay, I enjoy challenging myself. And I enjoy, even if I'm not good enough, I enjoy playing against the best. So yeah, that gave me a lot of inspiration and drive to keep going. And then the next season, we won the league. And then in pre-season against Zebra, I was probably having one of my best games for Ealing. Felt like I was going really, really well. And in the final 10 minutes of the game, I was chasing a kick, even though we'd already won the game, and sort of got a nudge as I was sprinting. Tore my ACL. So past season, I've been rehabbing, which has been tough. But it's been good as well. It's given me a little bit of a mental break and probably allowed me to find my motivation again. It really shows me that I enjoy what I do. So yeah, I'm looking forward to getting back out there.
Yeah, I was just going to ask, like, what's the sort of time frame on getting back on the pitch, starting to play again?
I'm hoping in the next 2 weeks that I'll be back training. I'll probably need a few weeks of training before I'm able to get picked.
Yeah, and Angus, I bet after 12 months you're absolutely flipping chomping at the bit.
Yeah, you'll be. Oh, come on. Angus, thanks for talking through like your career like that. I don't know your reflections, Graham, but as I heard it, I'm like, oh, it's pretty brutal.
Yeah,
you know, the way I know you're quite matter of fact in the way you spoke about it, but when it just comes down to like one man's decision, be like, look, I think I'm playing well here. And then this one guy's like, well, you're not playing in my team. I'm like, wow. You know, that is seriously black and white. I work in sales and I think that's black and white, but I think this is a whole new level.
It's funny you say that actually, Jacko, because I feel like it's almost, I think the issue is like, it's almost not black and white, right?
Yeah, you're right.
Someone's, yeah. But I mean, Angus, like, also, the issue of you've then got that uncertainty around, was it to do with my school? Was it to do with sort of, you know, not being from the right place, having the right school tie on? Like that must be tough when it's that kind of decision.
Yeah, and don't get me wrong, like my school was a good school, so I had a good platform, and there's probably better players than me who are playing at lesser schools who never got a chance. But it is that in sport, you see some amazing players who just don't get a run and their face just doesn't fit. And you see some pretty average players, but their face fits. They play a system well. Don't get me wrong. When that season where I played quite a lot for Ulster, you know, there were two or three people out of the way at the start of the season. And if they had been in the way, I maybe wouldn't have got my chance. And it's just crazy how fickle it is. Some people just get a chance and they show. And there's amazing players who never get a chance. It's amazing. Of course, as a Christian, I've got to look at it and go, I do think that season God had it in his plan that I was to play a good bit of rugby. And he also had it in his plan the next season that I wasn't to get an awful lot of rugby. We don't know what his plans for us are. Like, particularly in the last season with my injury, I just keep believing that he's got a plan for me. And it is amazing when you look back in hindsight, the plan seems a little bit more evident. Like, I wouldn't be in Ealing right now if I'd kept playing for Ulster as many times as I did. There's not a chance I'd have left my home club. And now I'm over in Ealing. Recently got married and my wife's come over as well. And life's just a lot different than what I would have planned it, but I'm really enjoying it as it is. But I'm rambling a lot. Back to the original point, sport is really fickle. It is, and there's some places where it is literally one man's opinion.
As part of Graham and I's rigorous background checking on our special guests, I guess we like to do a little like Twitter and Instagram crawl. And we found it's really good. I actually think your social media is brilliant. So we found this little quote that you retweeted. You re-exed. What do you say now, Graham? Re-exed.
Oh, gosh. Don't even get me started. Okay, re-exed anyway. Nightmare.
Retweet sounds good.
Okay,
yeah, keep it with that.
So your age doesn't define your maturity. Your grades don't define your ability. And what people say about you doesn't define who you are. It was retweeted many times along with you. But I thought it does raise an interesting topic that I'd love to chat to you about around, you know, the topic of your identity. You were just saying how it's, you know, it's quite a fickle world. And on paper, there's lots going for you. You're pretty successful. You're playing professional sport, which many people would love to. As you just said, you're like recently married. You're a good looking lad. Like, how have you found navigating where you find your identity the last 20 years, because that must have been a bit of a minefield as you went through your like teenage years and early 20s.
Definitely. I think particularly in Ulster, because they're the almost national team. You've got that, for example, someone like Craig Gilroy, when he walks around Belfast, everywhere he goes, people will know who he is. So it's really easy for your head to get pumped up massively. And you see that, I'll not name him, but there's one player who did unbelievably well and then gets picked for Ireland. So he's unbelievably well known. He's getting paid lots of money, you know, getting sponsors all over the show. Lots of girls like him, this sort of thing. And it's everything that is terrible for a young guy, because it just pumps your head up and it just makes you think that you are the man. And like happens to most people in that situation, you get humbled, and it's unbelievably tough then when people come straight back down to earth. I've probably got to give a lot of credit to my dad, who just always says, keep your feet in the ground. And God as well humbled me in that. I have had a lot of ups in my career, but I've also had a lot of downs and a lot of disappointments.
And Angus, yeah, just to ask, like, but I guess having gone through a bit of that, what has been your experience of trying to find solid things to build identity on?
Yeah, I think it's very easy. And when I look back, there are definitely times where I was on that path of probably starting to get carried away, starting to think I was someone. Like, even a good analogy of it is, with Ulster, you get pretty good deals with a nice BMW company nearby. And I've got, and still have, Volkswagen Polo, which my dad got me as my first car, which I love. But I remember sitting down looking and going, oh, look, how cool would I look in one of these BMs, and how nice would that be to drive? And my dad just said, like, why? You've got a good car. And that's just a little analogy of what it is like. Mm-hmm. It's so easy to try and create the picture of being a rugby player. And I think lots of guys get caught up in that. It's almost like you have to play up to a certain stereotype of being a sportsman. Yeah. But definitely the biggest thing is my faith that keeps me grounded, because I think whenever things are going really well, it's easy to forget about my faith and my identity and what Jesus has done for me. It's easy to think that I can give myself everything that I need. But having my faith reminds me that even if I have everything in the world, I'm still a broken person who is imperfect. But my faith reminds me that I'm still loved by Jesus, and that will make me whole. So whenever I'm getting carried away, I'm getting a big head, I look back and see what Jesus has done for me. But it also means whenever things are going badly and I'm not getting picked, I also remind myself of how much I'm loved. And I feel like my faith is a really good stabilizer for my mood and for my security and my image. When things are going well, I do need humble, and I need to remind myself that the things of this earth don't really matter that much. So if I'm driving a really nice BMW, what does it really matter? Or whenever things are going really, really badly and I'm not getting played, I remind myself that rugby is just a game, and that I am like what people have with a family. I'm truly loved no matter what. Not that I'm dismissing how much that means to me about my family, but it's the Lord of the universe. It's the creator of everything. The King of Kings loves me. So whenever things aren't going too well, it's a great comfort to me. Yeah, it's a good stabilizer.
I think people will find that really helpful. I like that word, stabilizer. And a lot of sports people would ride a lot of roller coasters in comparison to what you have. So I think it shows just from speaking to you. But I wondered how you, one of the things we spoke with Graham Daniels about, because we chatted to him a little bit about football, it was almost a year ago actually, but we thought retirement was a really interesting thing as a sports person. It's almost like thinking about death. I mean, I don't know if you've seen the Barbie film, but like Barbie mentions death and it's like the whole party stops. You know, for a sportsman, retirement can be the big thing that they just want to put off, don't think about. But how do you look forward, you know, let's say 10 years, how do you kind of look forward as a sports person?
I think it'll be harder than I think in my head at the moment, because for me, I'm studying alongside rugby because I know that it's not going to last forever. It's not like I'm building up a big pot that I'll be able to live on. But I do think for me, it will be harder than I think. And I think for a lot of other people, I think they do look at it and go, it is all of who they are, like who they are as a rugby player. And it does come with this status in the world. And I think whenever that stops, they aren't going to know who they are. And it's sad. You just see them start to question everything. And you can go from the top of the world to the bottom. But there are quite a few pressures with rugby and things that people just wouldn't expect, like never being able to pick your holidays and not getting that many holidays and having to be so disciplined with your sleep, with your nutrition. And in a way, I'm looking forward to having a little bit more freedom in my life. So I see it as win-win, but
I bet your wife is as well. Where's she on it? Did she marry you thinking you're a rugby superstar, or marry you thinking, oh, Angus and his rugby? Like, where's she on the spot?
Angus and his rugby. Yeah. Judith is from Dublin.
Oh, really?
Grew up in a football household, so rugby's never been that big in her life, which is good because I think
that keeps you humble. She's like, don't care. Next.
Well, when we met, it was while I was playing quite a bit for Ulster, and I think that was good for me. So yeah, I think retirement will be tougher than I think, but I'm not that scared of it.
Yeah.
But I think for a lot of people, I think it'd be really tough because rugby is their image. Particularly in England, actually. As in, I know I'm saying in Ulster, you're the boys walking around town, and you can definitely see that. But in England, the rugby culture and the rugby lads, there's just a big stereotype. And I think certain pubs and things in England, they're known as rugby pubs. And I find that all difficult to get involved with. But for them, having to step away from that is difficult.
Big. Look, I think another thing we should speak about, I was actually brought to tears this morning reading this. I wasn't really expecting that. If you don't mind, let me read this out on Instagram. It was a post that you made, and I'll just read it out for our listeners, and I'd love you to talk about it. But you said, nearly half my life without you, Mum, but I thank God for the 10 years we had together. It made me who I am. I can't wait to see you again. All my love, Angus. That's pretty sad, like, to read that. And Angus, I thought, if you don't mind just sharing with our listeners, we'd be really grateful to hear, how was it that your mum died so young? And then what was the immediate impact for you of losing your mum at such a young age?
Yeah, I had an amazing upbringing. I was in a family where my mum and dad loved each other a lot. They loved us really well. Me and my sister, I have a sister, Emma. They were both GPs who were doing pretty well. You know, so my mum was probably the best athlete in the house, was beating my dad at the half marathons. They would train together. We'd go for swims as a family, you know, going to all of our friends and involved in our church. And I guess life for them is probably what most middle-aged people would see as peak. Nothing amazingly flashy, but certainly had a very good life and were very blessed. And then my mum discovered a big lump under her armpit, and both of them being doctors, I think, knew it wasn't great. And so I remember when I was 8, my parents sitting me and my sister down, my sister would have been 10, and saying, Mum has to go to hospital for a little bit. She's probably going to have to stay in for like a week or so and do this every so often. I didn't really get it, but essentially my mum had, it was called non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, which the doctors didn't really diagnose properly because they thought it was Hodgkin's lymphoma, which is a much easier thing. And yeah, it could have been dealt with a little bit better. But Mum went through 2 years of treatment, and it kept spreading and it kept weakening her. And my mum was unbelievably fit and determined, but just wasn't up to the fight. That was tough, watching her weaken. Watching my dad, a doctor as well, both of them knowing what was happening, which when I look back on, must have been really tough for both of them. They knew what was happening. But yeah, my mum passed away when I was 10, but she fought so hard and was always the most amazing mother and had a really strong faith in Jesus. She said to my dad once that she wasn't afraid of dying. She just didn't want to leave us. And that summed her up. She knew where she was going. She knew that Jesus loved her, that he had died for her and paid the price for her imperfections. And she's with him in heaven. And that just gives me hope. I wouldn't be able to face it if I didn't have that hope. But yeah, it had a huge impact on me. I still miss her so much. And, you know, recently getting married on those big days, she's just the one person you want there. She's motivated me through a lot. Her determination and her fight, her attitude, And it's amazing. Like, genes are amazing. There's some things I do that my dad turns around and just says, that's exactly what your mum did. And I don't remember her doing it. Like, those sorts of things. As a 10-year-old, it was brutal. I was old enough to know how much I missed her and young enough to still need her a lot. It was sort of a horrible in-between stage. But my dad kept pointing me towards God, and my sister as well was a great support. And my dad's mum, my granny, was just the best granny you could ask for, and still is. But it has to be your own journey. It was at Christians in Sport camp when I was 12 or 13, when I really asked the question of, you know, I'm saying to everyone, and everyone's saying that mum was in heaven, but do I actually believe that? Like, is this what I believe? And I remember at the Christian Sport camp realizing that my faith and what I believe wasn't just for a Sunday school, but it was truly my whole life, and it was truly my mum's whole life. And that hope that we'll be reunited again and that my mum's in heaven just gives me a lot of joy. And I am just so thankful to have had the 10 years with her.
Yeah. And oh, Angus, thanks so much for sharing that. Thanks, Angus.
Yeah. I think often the Christian faith is looked at from a sort of theoretical perspective. I mean, having gone through a really hard situation like that, and you mentioned kind of those experiences at Christians of Sport camp and sort of going through those questions, did that help you with that grief, with that sort of period of mourning? Like, what was your, how practically helpful did you find that?
I remember questioning God a lot at the beginning and immediately after, why? Just why? Why is this in your plan? Why me? Why my mum? But I think that's very natural. And I think God wants us to ask those questions. I don't think he's someone who just wants me to accept it and to not ask. I think he's a God who cares. And I think whenever I was suffering, and still to this day, whenever I find it really tough, I think he's someone who feels that pain with me. There are definitely times where you look back and you go, I feel like my faith didn't help that practically. And as theoretical as it is, I miss my mum. And I think when you look back, I think God was with me. I think in those moments, whenever you are praying, whenever you are helped by other Christians, whenever you are at church and you feel that love of God and it's not theoretical, I think that is what gets you through. And even now, thinking of going to heaven, that is just hope. And it puts everything into perspective. Again, like I said earlier, who cares what car you drive? Who cares if I'm getting picked? I know that what Jesus has done for me means that I'm going to heaven now, no matter what happens. So yeah, it can be theoretical at times, but there's other times where it's extremely real.
Thanks, Angus.
Yeah.
Right, we're going to wrap up. I thought what we could do is you could just share with someone. I mean, you mentioned it before, but right, to a listener who loves his rugby or her loves her rugby, loves beer, loves just the camaraderie that comes with all of that, and maybe, who knows, have the money to go out to France. Like, and they just can't see that world being kind of compatible with what you've spoken about in terms of your Christian faith, going to church, that sort of thing. For them, that's just two different worlds. Like, and they could never see themselves kind of being a Christian. What would you, you must meet people like that all the time. What would you just say to someone like that? How would you put them at ease that it's not going to spoil their life and ruin all their fun?
I think the image of Christianity is don't do this, don't do that, and rules. But really, Christianity completely sets you free. What it really means is that none of us are perfect, but he loves me and he cares for me. So much so that he sent his own son to die, and he paid the price for everything that I've ever done wrong. And because I know what is in the future, and I know that what my end is going to be in heaven with him, it means that I'm under no pressure on earth. I'm under no pressure to earn enough money. I'm under no pressure to be liked. I'm under no pressure to make the team every weekend. I'm under no pressure to go and party. I can do whatever I want to do because Jesus has made my future secure. So yeah, like for me, it's just complete freedom.
Yeah, you can party not under pressure.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
I love that.
Yeah, the world's opinion of you, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
And that's what I say to myself whenever I'm running out onto the pitch, is that I want to do my best for the coach because I firmly believe in giving every single bit of my best. But his opinion doesn't matter because my future is secure. I know what Jesus has done for me. So I can go out there and I can have the worst rugby game of all time. And when I come back in and having missed every tackle and dropped every ball, God's still going to look at me and go, I still love you. I still died for you. And you're still going to be with me in heaven. And that's just freedom.
Great freedom. Love that. Look, Angus, it's been an absolute pleasure having you in the virtual studio, hearing of your career, and just, I just think the maturity, like I said before, in the man that you've become. And yeah, you're right, you're kind of stable, happy man, and don't take that for granted. I certainly look up to you. I'm in awe of you, and it's been a real privilege spending the time chatting to you, so thanks so much.
Well, thank you for the chat and having me on.
It's been great, Angus. Thanks so much.
You know what? I'm well up for coming down to Ealing Trailfinders when you're back on the pitch.
Let me know, because, well, we get a few free tickets.
Come on!
There's plenty of space. We're not the best supported team in the world.
Okay.
That's what Jack was angling for there.
Did you see what I did there, Graham?
Absolutely.
Well, Angus, honestly, it's been an absolute pleasure, and you know, all the best for the next couple of months as you get back into it, and we'll be rooting for you, mate.
Thank you very much, guys.